Our next case is Alpek Polyester v. Polymetrics AG, 2021-1706. Mr. Schweibens, we're ready when you are. And you don't need your mask here.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last part.
I said you don't need your mask while arguing.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that very much.
Can I just clear up a couple things before you begin? So there was no separate action against IVP directly, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the total value of the three samples that are at issue here is under $50?
We disagree with that, Your Honor. But ultimately, the goal of this case was not a monetary issue. It was ultimately, we were seeking an injunction. That was the primary goal of the case. But we disagree with that in terms of the value of the case.
So why didn't you seek an injunction against IVP?
The case was brought against Polymetrics, and ultimately that was the party that we chose to file suit against. We had not filed a case against IVP directly.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. There are two independent categories of reasons to reverse the grant of summary judgment of no induced infringement. First, there are disputed issues of material fact as to whether Polymetrics induced infringement of the asserted patents on the part of its customer, Indorama. And second, the district court erred in deciding multiple procedural issues that contravene well-settled Eighth Circuit precedent. With respect to the multiple disputed issues of material fact, Polymetrics actively induced its customer, Indorama's infringement, and Judge Nelson erred in granting summary judgment of no inducement, given evidence that Polymetrics had knowledge of the asserted patents, as well as knowledge of Indorama's infringing activities. It's not disputed, Your Honors,
that the evidence that they encouraged importation.
Yeah, there's multiple facts in the record, Judge Stoll, with respect to that point. The main one is the contract issue that we argued, that they entered into a contract. And ultimately, under Swedish law, that was the law that was chosen, that they were essentially responsible for actions that occurred in this commissioning period. So because there was an instruction to direct Indorama.
Your view is because at the time they owned the product under the contract.
That's correct. Yeah,
there should be an inference of inducement to import based on that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And it's
what about the contrary evidence? Isn't there some testimony to the contrary?
Yes, and from our perspective, Your Honor, that's a classic fact dispute. We have, on one side of the table, we have this document where the ultimate U.S. test results were incorporated into Polymetrics document. We have expert testimony saying that that's the case. We also have an admission from Polymetrics CEO that those U.S. test results were baked in to that document. And then,
but merely knowing that something might be happening is not enough for inducement, right?
Of course, Your Honor. We understand that there has to be the active steps. So you're right, Your Honor. It has to be more than knowledge. But we look to other facts that are in the record, Your Honor. That,
well, what other facts other than that, the quirk of Swedish law that you cite to? Because what I see is everything pointing the other way. I mean, IVP own personnel said it was their decision and their decision only.
Right. Well, our respectfully, Your Honor, our position on that is that declaration should not have been submitted because it was basically, that was a surprise witness. The first time we had ever heard that was in connection with the summary judgment motion.
You were allowed to take a deposition of that witness, Mr. Saini, right?
We were not. Well, actually, what we were offered was a deposition after the summary judgment motion was filed,
and
but
you
it was
did.
limited in time, limited in scope, And from our perspective, we wanted to be able to get the full amount of time that we were allowed under the federal rules, and we also wanted to ask that witness any question that we wanted versus it being sort of limited in time and scope after the summary judgment motion was filed. And from the federal rules of civil procedure perspective, I mean, from our to get that sort of at the time of summary judgment when the case had been pending since 2016, and there was no disclosure of Indorama, Indorama's Ventures Poland, of this witness,
but
other
wait,
than
the
in documents.
Specifically addressed that and said, what do you mean there's no disclosure? I mean, you knew who he was. You knew all the details about the corporate structure. You knew what role he played. And so that's why the court said, well, you should have deposed him earlier, but I'll still let you depose him, but just to a limited extent.
So the court said there was an offer made by Polymetrics after the summary judgment motion was filed, after we brought to the court's attention that they failed to identify this person, the company, and the related companies in their initial disclosures. It was at that point that the deposition was offered. But again, it was offered for a very limited amount of time. It was also offered for a very limited scope in terms of the...
But didn't the district court make specific findings that there was plenty in discovery even before that point in time that would have indicated to you what this person's role was?
What the person's role was, I would concede that.
And who
that
the person is.
What their name was and what their title was, yes, Your Honor, but the specific evidence that was put forth in this declaration with respect to the importation of Mr. Gosanias, none of that was in the documents. The first time we had ever learned about this particular importation was in the declaration of Mr. Sinai. I mean, it was an explosive declaration to come. And I think my friend on the other side would admit that they didn't even become aware of it until, you know, shortly before they filed the summary judgment motion. Our position is that at that point, or at some point, they should have amended their initial disclosures to at least give us notice. We had no notice until the summary judgment motion was filed. And again, this is, you know, 4 years after the case was brought.
Well, what do you think that you would have gained by having the deposition earlier? I mean, you knew what his position was. You were able to take a deposition on the specific points at issue in the summary judgment motion. What benefit would you have had by deposing him earlier?
Well, the benefit would be to cross-examine the witness. We never got that opportunity, ultimately, to find out, to test his credibility, to test sort of the statements that he was making about not having...
What do you mean? I don't understand. You took his deposition, and now you're saying that
you didn't
have the opportunity to cross-examine.
I apologize. I misunderstood your question. We never got the opportunity to depose Mr. Sinai. So you asked me, we did not depose him. There's a couple of names that may be confusing. There's a Mr. Owasi that is the Alphabet representative. That's the U.S. Indorama.
There was an offer to...
There was an offer for Mr. Sinai, who was part of the Polish entity. But again, that was given late in the game after the summary judgment motion.
But you didn't take him up on the offer.
We did not take him up because we did not think it was fair to limit us in time and scope with respect to that deposition. We wanted to have a full and fair opportunity.
So who limited you in time and scope?
The offer that was made.
The offer did. Why didn't you go to the court and say, under the rules, we need more discovery before we can respond to the summary judgment motion? There is a provision for that.
I mean, from our perspective, given sort of when it happened, we also thought it would undermine our motion to strike as well because of the federal rules argument that we had made. So ultimately, the decision was a decision that we felt we should get the full and fair opportunity to depose him and have be unlimited in terms of the scope which we could depose him.
So you didn't ask for a full and fair opportunity to depose him. You just said we're going to make the strategic decision not to depose him because we want to strike.
We just felt like that the rules dictated that the declaration should be stricken because the rules are fairly clear that you must identify anyone that you're going to rely on for purposes.
It's still a discretionary decision that the district court made in part based on the fact that there was an offer to depose him.
There was definitely an offer. There was an offer to depose him, and it is discretionary, Your Honor. But we feel like it was an abuse of discretion as it relates to the fact that they failed to identify this person in their initial disclosures. And our view is that it's an automatic sanction under Rule 37. If you fail to do that, that person cannot be utilized in a summary judgment motion unless it's established that it was substantially justified or harmless. And here, in our perspective, it was neither. because referencing the fact that he was in the documents, there's cases from the Eighth Circuit that we cited in our brief that say that that's just not good enough.
Yeah, but he wasn't just buried in the documents. The cases that you cite are where there's somebody buried in all kinds of the documents and he's hardly ever mentioned. I mean, this is the person who received the test results from AlphaPet. And those documents were disclosed. I mean, there were 1,300 documents, right, that where his name appears?
I apologize, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But, I mean, forget all the others. What about the email?
The email just said, here's test results. It didn't say, and here's a graph. It didn't say anything else. It was a very cryptic email that was sent to Mr. Sinai. And it said that there was results that we're sending you. But it didn't confirm the fact that there was, that could have been for PET that had nothing to do with the revamp of the plan. So again, that email alone, we don't think was enough to give us that type of notice. When you compare what's in the declaration, this declaration was cited in Polymetric's brief 84 times. It was the primary piece of evidence that the court used to grant summary judgment. And this person was not disclosed to us until they filed the summary judgment motion. It's the classic, trial by ambush here, summary judgment.
And can I go back to the email? You said it doesn't even say what it's about. It's identified. It says it's PET from Poland, right?
It's, I think, exact language, Your Honor. I have to find it, but I believe it said Poland test results. I think that's what it said, Your Honor. I apologize if I didn't get that exactly right, but I believe that's what it said.
Okay.
So exactly. So, but just because it said Poland test results doesn't mean that it was for in this commissioning period time, and doesn't mean that it was actually the product that was made with the accused process. It could have been before, it could have been from a different area, and ultimately that's important because the record reflects that there was PET that was sent to the United States right before that commissioning period time. So from our perspective, we didn't know for sure that this was relevant to the argument that we wanted to make.
Isn't that what discovery is all about?
Sure, Your Honor, that is what discovery is about, but discovery is also about following the rules from appellant's perspective in terms of identifying witnesses in your initial disclosures and doing it in a timely way, or at least supplementing them before you bring a motion for summary judgment or you go to trial.
I know you want to move off of this, but let me just, isn't it also true that you asked questions about Mr. Sinai in the other depositions that were taken before summary judgment?
We asked questions about documents that were illegible, and the witnesses did their best to answer them. But the ultimate question about Mr. Gossain's importation of the sample into the United States, that was not disclosed until Mr. Sinai's declaration. It was not in the documents, and there was no way that we could have discerned that. In fact, Mr. Awasti, the AlphaPet witness, actually admitted there was no way that we could have figured that out until you saw the Sinai declaration with summary judgment. And Polymetrics, my friends on the other side, has also admitted that there's no way that they could have figured that out until they spoke to Sinai as well. In other words, they didn't find out about this fact until they were preparing their summary judgment motion on August 24. That's in the record. And ultimately, from our perspective, that's just too late, and that should have been disclosed earlier. If I may, Your Honor, there is other evidence in the record that shows the causation beyond this, including the fact that the Polymetrics was advertising and promoting that this EcoSteer process was FDA approved. From our perspective, that's a significant fact from causation. And also, there was an offer for sale that Polymetrics made to AlphaPet in the United States in 2013. So from our perspective, a reasonable juror could look at all of this evidence and the circumstantial evidence and say, yeah, they felt like they were free to be able to import this into the United States because Polymetrics was promoting FDA approval. Polymetrics had previously made an offer to sale to them in 2013 of the same technology. Now, they didn't accept that offer for sale. But ultimately, those we think are all circumstantial facts that would lead a reasonable juror to conclude that Polymetrics wanted that PET to go to the United States so that they could fulfill the contract and get paid. We think that's a very reasonable theory to present to the jury, ultimately, and it's certainly in line with its court's most recent ruling in the Glaxo case and other cases that show that circumstantial evidence can be used to prove induced infringement. Your Honor, with respect to the 602 issue, we think that's also a very important issue in this case as it relates to a third party. Mr. Awasti, who was the Alphabet 30B6 designee, he admitted that this PET was sent to the United States for Polymetrics, and ultimately that those test results were given to Polymetrics.
This is the testimony that was excluded because he did not have personal knowledge,
That's
right?
correct, Your Honor. That was the court's decision. And from our perspective, because he was a 30B6 witness, that the corporate understanding that this had happened was permitted. The real question is...
It's only under 30B6. It's only if it's an adverse party's testimony that it would be admitted with a lack of personal knowledge, right? Because, you know, the corporate knowledge here, it's not an adverse party. So what's the basis for saying that it should have been admitted?
It's that what he was testifying on was the corporate knowledge. I think that the crux, I don't mean to not answer your question, but the crux of the issue is why. Why was that PET brought? That's really what Polymetrics pointed to. That's what the court pointed to. You couldn't tell why, and he didn't know why. But from our perspective, the why doesn't matter. He was saying from the corporate perspective, his testimony, the corporate understanding, Your Honor, was that this PET was brought into the United States, and ultimately the test results were given to Polymetrics. And from our perspective, that is a key admission because, again, goes to our circumstantial case that the affirmative steps were taken to induce them to infringe. And ultimately, Your Honor, we're talking about a summary judgment standard here. All of these facts that we're talking about and that Judge Malley had raised the question on, all these have to be viewed in a light most favorable to DAC. It's what my client...
It's not setting that aside. I understand what you're saying, but it's an evidentiary issue.
So we're
not going to look at, start weighing the testimony before we decide whether there was an abuse of discretion on the evidentiary issue, right?
Right. So I didn't mean to mix the issues together, Your Honor, but they are sort of interrelated in terms of you have to look at all these facts. Back on the 602 issue, I agree with you completely. That is an evidentiary issue. That is something that is abuse of discretion.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that if that testimony comes in, then it goes into the bucket of other testimony that's all sort of considered together under the court's de novo standard for purposes of looking at whether the grant of summary judgment was proper or not.
You've exceeded your time, including rebuttal time, but let's hear from the other side and we'll give you 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I very much appreciate that.
Hello. And Your Honor, may it please the court. I must first start off by saying that this is the first time I heard the FDA an offer for sale argument. The appellant did not make that argument in its briefing, nor did they make that on summary judgment.
So I was missing something because I didn't see it.
It's a new argument for me, and Polymetrics has not had the opportunity to respond to that. With respect to the Saini declaration, the district court found that Polymetrics did not violate Rule 26. Rule 26 requires a party to supplement their initial disclosures if that information was not otherwise made known during discovery.
But once you realized that you were going to go so far with this witness that you were going to actually put in an affidavit, why didn't you just send a letter supplementing your Rule 26 disclosures at that point while you were still going on and preparing your papers for summary judgment?
Your Honor, because of the Rule 26E standard and that Mr. Saini was made known during discovery, as the district court found.
Yeah, but what's wrong with belt and suspenders? Because the district court could have found against you on that standard.
Correct. As a matter of fact, we did supplement our initial disclosures because, understand the context here, there were cross motion for summary judgment. So they filed a cross motion for summary judgment, and before we submitted a second declaration of Mr. Saini, after we updated the initial disclosures, and offered Mr. Saini for deposition. So we did supplement that before we filed Saini's declaration in connection with our opposition to their cross.
Before you filed his second declaration and you realized what their objection was, then you put him on the Rule 26.
Correct. Again, as Judge O'Malley said, it's belt and suspenders. But we didn't feel
Why didn't you do it earlier? Why didn't you do it earlier?
Because we were just following the federal rules of civil procedure. Rule 26 says that if he was otherwise made known in discovery, and the principal piece of evidence that he had as of August 2019 was the August 7, 2014 Alphapet email, which was addressed to Mr. Saini, and was the subject was pollen sample results. The only information that they didn't have concerning that piece of evidence was the fact that it related to commissioning period PET. But on July 22nd of 2020, they took the deposition of Mr. Wasti from Alphapet, and they claim in their brief at page 50 of their opening brief and page 31 that this was critical new evidence, that they finally learned that that memo, that report, that email, had to do with commissioning period PET.
Mr. Saini was a third party? That's right.
That's
third
correct.
Party. I mean, how would they know that you were going to rely on this third-party witness? It's not even your own. I could see if it was your own employee, then maybe Rule 26 would be satisfied. But it's, Mr. Saini was a third party. How would they know you were going to rely on him?
They didn't know that we were going to rely on him, but that's not the requirement. The requirement is whether this witness was made known in discovery, and there can be, as the district court found, GPDAC simply cannot credibly contend, that Saini's identity and significance had not been made known to them during discovery. And that's that.
So you both made some strategic decisions that may or may not have been correct. So you made a strategic decision not to supplement your Rule 26 disclosures, but you knew that it was a risky decision, and that's why you offered a deposition. Right?
Well, we were giving them the opportunity to put, we didn't realize it was a risky proposition in terms of identifying a prior witness, but we were just giving them a fair opportunity to take Mr. Saini's.
Well, why would you do that if you didn't think it was risky? Why didn't you just say, hey, discovery closed. You saw his name in there. You could have taken his deposition.
Just so they could round out and their evidentiary base for the purposes of responding to the summary judgment motion.
Counsel,
we wanted to give them.
Counsel, would you address the question of inducement by Polymetrics, what they did and what they knew?
Sure, Your Honor. Polymetrics did not induce IVP to send any samples to the United States. There was no evidence in the record, and the district court found that. There was no evidence in the record that Polymetrics directed IVP to send any of the samples to the United States. Polymetrics submitted the declarations of four witnesses from Polymetrics, including the CEO, Mr. Mueller, the Director of Research and Development, Mr. Crystal, Head of Sales, Mr. Polyakov, and the Project Manager, Mr. Von Tobel. And all of those witnesses say they had no knowledge of the samples that IVP sent to the United States. And Saini said that decision was his and his alone, and that was unrebutted. Because of that evidence, GPDAC had to create some theories for causation, because the principal issue at the district court was causation, the issue of causation. And that's an essential element of their claim on which they have the burden of proof. And the district court found that they didn't provide sufficient evidence. Their theories of causation were causation by contract, and the court found that the contract did not require IVP to send samples to the United States.
Of course, this is on summary judgment.
I'm sorry?
This is on summary judgment.
Correct.
No genuine issues at all.
No, and there is not, Your Honor, because the standard for summary judgment is whether there's a genuine issue of material fact. And the word genuine is important here. And an issue is genuine if there's sufficient evidence for a jury to find in favor of the non-movement. And the district court found that their evidence was insufficient to rise to that level.
What about the ratification theory? That is, that there was some similarity between the testing done in the United States on the product that was imported to the United States and the test results that Polymetrics had, I think. This ratification idea that something that occurred after the fact shows that somehow they were involved in encouraging that importation. Are you aware of any cases where something, evidence of ratification can be used because it's after the fact for inducement?
I'm only aware of the one case that they cited, and I don't have that citation. In that case, there was evidence of inducement and knowledge of the infringing acts, and then there was ratification thereafter. There's no evidence that Polymetrics ratified the testing by incorporating that data into their May 28, 2015 report. The only evidence they submitted in support of that was the declaration of their expert, Dr. Schiraldi, who drew an imprecise line representing what he believed to be July 23rd, 2014 data, and the court found that to be insufficient evidence because he said it matched almost exactly, and for scientific measurements, saying that the data from the AlphaPet email was contained in the May 28, 2015 report, that such imprecise terms is insufficient to go to the jury. The jury would be required to speculate as to whether that figure 4.4 in the May 28, 2015 report actually included that data. The other piece of evidence that they relied on was this alleged omission by Mr. Mueller, where he said that he was being deposed on the two documents, the May 28, 2015 report and the AlphaPet 2014 email. He testified in the prior 29 pages that they didn't refer. They took one answer out of 29 pages of testimony where it was kind of vague as to what document he is referring to, but he clearly testified in the preceding pages that he never saw the on page 119953. He said in response to the AlphaPet data, he said that's something I see for the first time, so I don't know about the background. With respect to the May 25th. The May 28th report, he says, I recognize the document, but I've not seen it before. And further, the testimony that they're relying on where Mr. Mueller made this alleged omission is on 119977 of the appendix. But when you look earlier in his testimony, and then it said 119972, Mr. Mueller said, I think I have the wrong page, bear with me. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not the right accurate site. It's 11963. When asking about the Exhibit 7, which was the AlphaPet email, he said, I cannot confirm. I don't know whether they are identical samples or not. The results in both documents are close to each other, but I have no idea whether it's the sample, it's the same measurement. Now, GPDAC would have this court believe that during the deposition, Mr. Mueller was able to identify on that figure 4.1 of the May 28, 2015 report, which is found at 7711 of the appendix, and was able to identify the specific data from July 23rd at 3 p.m. on that data, on that graph. And when you look at that graph, you can see that it's all these data points, hundreds of data points that kind of merge together. And the irony here is that their own expert, who was paid to find the data from the AlphaPet email in the May 28, 2015 report, couldn't find it. He concluded that it matched almost exactly. So they expect this court to believe that Mr. Mueller admitted during his deposition that that data from the Alpha report was contained in the May 28th report. So there's just no evidence of record that Polymetrics ratified and used that data. In fact, the court found the evidence to be to the contrary. The district court relied on a declaration of Mr. Crystal, who said Polymetrics never received the data. Mr. Mueller also testified that these measurements during the commissioning period are daily measurements and that they have to be done on site. You wouldn't send, it makes no sense to send it across the Atlantic during a commissioning period to test these results during a commissioning. In the end, the district court found that GPDAC circumstantial evidence of causation was so weak that the jury would be required to speculate. And therefore, the court found that there was insufficient evidence on causation to submit to the jury, and she granted summary judgment in favor of Polymetrics, and Polymetrics requested.
So, can you enlighten me on the things that I asked about in the very beginning? I mean, what is the relationship now between these two players? Why go after Polymetrics for things that it appears that IVP might have done?
Your Honor, I've been asking that question for 5 years, and I still don't know the answer, and I don't know if I'll ever have the answer to that. We're fighting over 289 kilograms of PET that were sent from IVP to the United States for testing that had nothing to do with the plant. It had to do with interlaboratory cross-tacking. It had to do with running samples on an Aarberg machine, which is a packaging machine, a preform machine. It had nothing to do with the plant.
Are either Polymetrics or IVP importing any of this into the United States?
No, they're not, Your Honor. And first of all, Polymetrics doesn't import. They're an engineering company that builds these plants for their customers, such as Indorama. Indorama is in the business of manufacturing PET, and there is zero evidence that IVP imported any commercial PET. There is no dispute that IVP sent 289 kilograms over a four-year period for testing. In particular, as you noted at the beginning, the commissioning period PET, I think, was 27 kilograms, street value of about $49. And I understand the issue from GPD-DAC's perspective is one of an injunction, but Polymetrics is not involved with IVP. Okay, so even if there was injunctive relief, there's no injunctive relief against Polymetrics. They're not involved with the company. They built the plant, gave them the keys to the company, to the plant, and Indorama's on their own. So, I can't answer that question, Your Honor. I wish I could. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Schweibens has 3 minutes if you need them.
Thank you, Your Honor, very much.
Do you agree with my reading of the briefs and with what your friend on the other side said, as you've never even mentioned FDA or any relationship between Polymetrics and the FDA anywhere?
No, Your Honor. We respectfully disagree, and we would point the court to our summary judgment motion, which is at Appendix 6330 and 31, where we reference the FDA issue.
It's not in your briefs to us, though, right?
No, Your Honor, but it's part of our submission below in the summary judgment brief that we made, our affirmative summary judgment brief. We made that when we were...
Tell me what pages?
6330. And 31, and then again also at 6361 through 63. And I can only offer for sale, Your Honor, that was mentioned at another place, if I could, for the record, just note that's at Appendix 396. So those are both those issues are part of the record, Your Honor. I just wanted to hit a couple issues really quickly, if I could, which was the reference again of the question about the value of this case. I would refer the court to the MEMC v. Mitsubishi case, which is a Judge Shaw opinion from the Federal Circuit from 2005, where this similar issue came up, where there was zero damages. But the court sort of ignored that ultimately and still went ahead with the case because of the nature of that case, which is very similar to our case on multiple issues. So I wanted to point that out for the court. Then another issue that I think that is very important to just hit very quickly, Your Honors, with respect to that email that you referenced again, the one that was written to Mr. Sinai, from AlphaPet. Again, it's at Appendix 12599 through 600. If you look at that email closely, and I'm sure Your Honors have, there's nothing in that email about importation. Nothing. There's no way anyone could discern that something was imported just based on the face of that email. So we wanted to put that in the record as well. You mentioned discovery, Your Honor. There was still 6 months left of discovery when the summary judgment motion was filed. So discovery had not closed. We had not an opportunity to even finish discovery before the motion was granted. With respect to the question about ratification cases, Judge Stoll, I just wanted to point your attention to some cases that we have cited. There's the Bennett Marine case, and there's the Powerlift cases, which both reference the fact that ratification can serve as a basis for induced infringement. So I just wanted to point that out to Your Honor. That's in our briefs, just so you're aware of those cases. And then the last issue, Your Honor, I think that's really significant on the 602 issue with Mr. Awasti. When you look at the question and answer, It's repeated in page 24 of our opening brief. It's very clear that no objection was made by Polymetrics counsel or Alphabet's counsel at that deposition. And under Rule 32, Delta 3 Bravo, you don't make an objection, it's waived. So they never made that 602 objection. They didn't even have it in their summary judgment briefing. It was raised after when they were doing supplemental briefing for summary judgment. And that ends up being one of the main bases of the court excluding that testimony under 602. They never made an objection at the deposition, and it was not even in their summary judgment briefing. And the only reason it was we sort of preserved the issue is because we told the court, hey, we never got a chance to address the 602 issue that was raised late. We just want to say for the record, here's our arguments about why it's 30B6, and here's why, ultimately, we think it should have been admissible. But we never got an opportunity to brief that. Again, we're sort of sandbagged with that 602 argument after the fact. So we wanted to point out those issues for your honors. And with that, I think, Your Honors, we will submit the case for briefing. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your arguments. The case is submitted. And that concludes our arguments for today.